much you could save.
Newsmakers, talk to Jason Miller.
Congressman Daryl Issa.
Getting the right pay for the right motivation for the right worker should be the goal of the federal government. And I think everyone on my committee, on both sides of the aisle, would agree with that. One of the problems is you do end up with sort of the legacy questions. Is the pay and benefits package right, and can it be amended? And if it's amended, should those amendments be slow and pragmatic?
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive.
This program may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens up the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency may be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today I'm here with Professor Foreman, and he is a professor of decision sciences at George Washington University. He's also founder of a company called Expert Choice. Good morning, Professor. How are you today?
Good morning. It's a pleasure being with you.
You know, it's interesting that we have a lot of people who claim to be experts on the air here. And I think we have a bona fide expert here. I mean, Professor Foreman's been doing this for decades, and he's well-known all throughout the world. He's written books. People in universities are following his program on decision-making, and I thought we'd bring him in here, and maybe he could offer us some examples of good best practices for making decisions and how to learn more about making decisions. And that's one of the reasons I wanted him to address some of our federal IT professionals here. But before I start bragging about your background, why don't you maybe give the listeners maybe just a brief nutshell, just the mountaintops of the last two or three decades of your incredible career here.
Okay. Well, I started at the University of Rochester studying electrical engineering, and that's where I met my first computer, an IBM 1620 with punch cards.
Oh, no.
We had to solve a fifth-degree polynomial for a lab. And it took us 3 or 4 days with desktop calculators, what they call the Frieden calculators. And that's when I was committed to learning more about computers.
Yeah, those times where you'd drop them off at night and come back in the morning, right? Was those the days?
It was, and we actually never got the right answer.
So. Yeah, it was really
frustrating. After that, I used a 1620 in a summer project for some satellite tracking work in the early days. That was in 1963, I think.
Wow.
So you can tell how old I am.
Yeah, my goodness gracious. And worked
to me,
in...
I don't seem that old, but when I go fill in these things online, it says, scroll down to the year you were born, I'm almost off the list.
I'm back there with Abraham Lincoln myself, so I think we're equals here. You were also involved in the ARPA program initially, too, weren't you?
Yes, well, following... school at the University of Rochester, I went into the Navy and taught in Rickover's nuclear power program. And that was quite interesting. We taught the skippers of the ships that were going out, as well as the enlisted people. And my next-door neighbor, after I moved to the Washington area, told me that he worked for Rickover on a daily basis, said if Rickover were in charge of the civilian nuclear power program, we never would have had Three Mile Island, and the whole industry would be different. And I believe that's true. He was a very man of details and a very insightful person. When I moved to Washington area, I went to work at the MITRE Corporation. Well, before that, I got a master's degree at Johns Hopkins.
Just throw that in there, just another one. Pile them on.
In management science. And that was a whole new field for me. I started out in electrical engineering for a master's, and I realized it was just too technical for me. And management science was a new field. It started at the end of World War II, and it really applied mathematical principles to the science of operations and decision-making. After that, I went to work at the MITRE Corporation. That's what brought me to the Washington area in McLean. And I worked on some interesting projects there. It's just one of the FCRC think tanks, MITRE is. They have a different structure now, I think. One of the projects I dealt with was with their latest computer that was an IBM 360/50 with all of 512K of memory.
Ooh, boy, people are laughing now.
Yeah, and then I had some projects at the Pentagon. I had to go to the Pentagon and schedule time on the weekends. And they had a 360/65, I think, with a megabyte of memory. That was a big machine.
Oh, I remember those days, yeah.
And we attached hardware monitors to measure performance to get every bit out of it. But the interesting project that I worked on after that at MITRE, well, I did one with Bruce Davis at what was then the National Bureau of Standards on the impact of new technologies.
Before it was cool.
Before it was cool. And I remember going around, and one of the places we went was we visited a gas pump where they actually had a credit card way of paying for your gas at the gas pump.
Whoa, that was a breakthrough back then.
New technologies.
Yeah.
But the thing that really made some impact in terms of today's world was a project called the ARPANET, which turned out to be the pre-runner of the Internet. And that was the store and forward packet technology. And there was a team of people from throughout the country, both Eric and Newman, and many of the universities, MIT and UCLA and UCSB, and MITRE had a presence in there. And we developed, some colleagues of mine, the first distributed database system to run between different computers on the ARPANET.
You got to wonder if my 19-year-old daughter, when she sends a text, she realizes she's standing on the shoulders of guys like you from 20 and 30 years ago who did all the grunt work, huh?
Well, there are a lot of shoulders around. I remember years ago there was a series right after The Ascent of Man called Connections. And I think that's gone out of favor, but they ought to bring that back because it shows that almost everything we do is connected to what came before.
And of course.
There are a lot of shoulders around.
Yeah. So I think what's interesting for my audience is that you've been in the Navy. You've been in the military background. You've also been involved in research and development. You've been involved with startups, involved in academia, both in the world of electrical engineering, and you have a pretty wide background. I think you can take a look at some of the problems my listeners have from a pretty detached, pretty good perspective. And the problem my listeners have mostly is involving IT technology, making decisions. It's like, so Obama says, hey, you got to move to the cloud. You go to the cloud first. So my listeners are scratching their heads going, well, what do I put in the cloud and what do I keep at home here? And all of a sudden, you get a new directive and it says, oh, by the way, your budget's being bumped by 10%. You got to get rid of 10% of your people. Who do you get rid of and why? And these are basic decisions. And this is really your field of expertise, making decisions, isn't it?
Exactly. And it's something that people take for granted that, well, I'll just think hard about it. I've got a lot of experience. And they think they can come up with the best decision. On the other hand, there are scientists that say, look, you need to do some mathematical model, and that'll tell you the best decision. Neither approach works. And the fascinating thing is, to me, is the last 5 or 10 years in the field of neuroscience, they've been able to attach probes to people's brains, heads, and so on, and see what parts of the brain light up when they think various ways. And what they found is that some of the theories that we've had going back to Plato, Plato talked about the emotional way of making decisions and the rational way of making decisions. He talked about a charioteer being pulled by wild horses, and the wild horses represented the emotion, and the charioteer was the reason to steer the horses. And that kind of philosophy has been propagated throughout the years, and even Freud talked about the id, which was the instinct, the uncontrolled instinct, and the ego, which was the rational, organized self. So the idea of making decisions with intuition on the one hand, intuition and emotion on the one hand, and reason or logic or mathematics on the other hand, these things have been in play for many, many centuries. And the thought up until recently was that, well, animals have emotion, they can do things by instinct, but only humans can reason. So reason must be better. And it turns out that the part of the brain that deals with instincts and intuition and emotion, it's called the amygdala, is much, much more powerful than our part of the brain that deals with reason, which is the prefrontal cortex. And so if you want to think about it in terms of microcomputers and macrocomputers, the reasoning part of the brain is very, very small in capability. And yet, when we rely on emotion to make these decisions, these decisions are so complex that our emotional intuition tells us, on the one hand, you'd like to go left, on the other hand, you'd like to go right, and this pull back and forth. What do we do? So we have these conflicts. And the conflict is in each individual's mind, but it's also in many individuals' minds when these decisions have to be made by groups of people.
Oh, it multiplies it, doesn't it? Wow.
It really does. And that's where the reason comes in, because with the proper use of reason, and it has to be done fairly carefully, we can actually synthesize all of these conflicts, these emotional conflicts in one person's mind and many people's minds. But it has to be done, as I said, carefully, because when we start to use science in ways that are inappropriate, these models are abstractions, they have some assumptions, these assumptions aren't always correct. A model in and of itself is always going to be lacking in terms of some subjective or qualitative ingredient. And all of these important decisions, what do I put in the cloud, or how do I reduce the federal budget, they all have qualitative considerations.
Yeah, they do.
And so,
excuse me, we have to interrupt your talk here, to take a break here. We come back, we can expand this a little bit more. We got to take a break here, Doctor.
Sure, okay. I'll wait here.
Yeah, you're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Professor Foreman. He is a professor of decision sciences at George Washington University and also founder of a company called Expert Choice.
And now Ask the CIO, brought to you by Vion Corporation.
Brigadier General Kevin Nally is the CIO of the Marine Corps. He says new technology must meet specific criteria before it's implemented.
I always start in Afghanistan or our forward most deployed forces and work my way back. So if what we develop here in the Beltway can't be implemented in Afghanistan, then I'm not interested in it. We need to start with Afghanistan to that individual Marine out there that needs that information and knowledge. How do we get it to them, and then how are we going to work our way back?
CIOs and IT directors, is your network attached storage infrastructure out of control? Do you have dozens and dozens of NAS appliances that are difficult to administer? Ask the experts at Vion Corporation how Hitachi's high-performance NAS, powered by BlueArc, can consolidate your NAS infrastructure, reduce your number of NAS appliances, and improve your NAS performance. With a 30-year partnership, Vion and Hitachi Data Systems have been bringing you innovative technologies with quality service. Visit Vion.com to learn more. That's Vion.com.
This audio puzzle is brought to you by Quest Government Services. Identify the federal agency problem.
Am I number E enough? All the other information is way prettier. I look fat in this network, don't I?
The answer? Insecure data. With Quest's suite of security solutions, even your most sensitive data stays protected. For a free risk assessment, visit quest.com/federal. That's quest.com/federal.
We need to explore that cave, Sergeant.
Sir, the opening's too small. I can't get a man in there, sir.
I'll go.
Who are you?
I'm Sug V, the robot for the infantry, sir.
A robot for infantry?
Yes, sir. I'm small, light, and versatile. A tool that can protect every squad, especially when dealing with the tough conditions in Afghanistan.
Well, what are you waiting for? Get in there, Sug V.
Yes, sir.
For more information, visit iRobot.com. Protecting troops. Saving lives. Making a difference. iRobot.
Attention! If you're attempting to lose weight, please stay tuned for an important opportunity. In a 6-month clinical study, participants lost an average of 30 pounds without changing their eating habits or routine. Now, Sensa is conducting a market trial in this listening area. If you're trying to lose weight, you are eligible to try Sensa free for 30 days. Call 1-800-600-9067 now to request your free trial. Participation in this free trial does not require any dieting, pills, or change in lifestyle. In fact, we only ask that you continue your current eating habits. Just use clinically proven Sensa, the same weight loss breakthrough you've seen on Extra, Dateline NBC, and America's Newsroom. Your satisfaction is guaranteed. If you want to lose weight, you are eligible to participate in this market trial. For your 30-day free trial, you must call this number now. 1-800-600-9067. That's 1-800-600-9067. 1-800-600-9067.
If you're an IT professional looking to advance your career, it's anything but a game. Which is why UMBC is the only university in Maryland to offer graduate programs in human-centered computing, where students apply principles from human-computer interaction, behavioral sciences, and design. UMBC also offers graduate programs in information systems, including an online master's in IS. get the credential that makes a difference and put some muscle back into your resume. Find out more at is.umbc.edu today.
Cybersecurity runs deeper than information assurance. It includes mobile security, cyber innovations, forensics, collaboration. That's why last month the Defense Department increased its cyber budget request by nearly $1 billion. And it's why DHS is taking unprecedented steps to assume responsibility government-wide. Join FCA Bethesda on April 29th at the Bethesda North Marriott for its executive breakfast on the latest developments in mission-critical cybersecurity. For speaker lineup and to register, visit FCABethesda.com.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we have Professor Foreman. He's a professor of decision sciences at George Washington University, also a founder of a company called Expert Choice, kind of appropriately if you're a professor of decision science. And I'll give you a decision that many of my listeners are have to make maybe this week or next week for sure. You know, they're getting forced to shut down some data centers and bring everything together. How do you do that? What do you keep? What do you not keep? They're getting forced into collaboration. They're getting forced into transparency. So we see all these, you know, vague terms, transparency, collaboration, reducing budget, being more efficient. These all boil down to decisions of what do you do and when do you do with who. Isn't that true?
That is absolutely true. And there are a lot of terms floating around, and these terms have to be put together and organized. So we'll get back to your example in a minute, but let me just talk about some of these terms. When you have a decision, there was a Nobel Prize winner, Herbert Simon, who said, what we need to do is identify the problem or opportunity, and that's what he called intelligence. Design alternative solutions, so those are the alternatives, he called that design, and then choose an alternative choice. In some of the problems that we have, though, it's not just choosing one alternative, it's choosing a combination, what we call a portfolio of alternatives. So in your example about should we go to the cloud or not, there may be a choice decision where an organization has nothing in the cloud right now, and then the choice is should we go to the cloud or just not, just avoid entirely. So those are two alternatives. Or if they've already made that decision, they could take a look at all the things they're doing in their IT and say which of these we put in the cloud and which ones don't. And there may be some constraints, some dependencies, and so on and so forth. So what do we do when we have alternatives that we have to choose one from or a combination, and we have many, many different trade-offs to make? So let me talk a little bit about terminology, and we emphasize this in our courses at GW. We talk about objectives. We focus on objectives. In fact, I wrote a book called Decision by Objectives. The subtitle was How to Convince Others That You're Right. because it turns out that's as important.
Persuasion, as yeah.
Persuasion. And in fact, the subtitle really should be, or how can somebody else convince me that I'm wrong?
Yeah.
Because you shouldn't go in there with an open mind.
Good defense.
And how do we do that? And that's the conversation that needs to take place. So how does that conversation take place? Well, we have alternatives. Where do we get these alternatives from? Well, they can be done through whiteboarding. In fact, in our software Comparian, we have a collaborative structuring module where people can be in the same room all over the world. They just type in some ideas. These are alternatives. Now, typically when people do this in a meeting, each person is thinking of their own idea, and they want to wait to their turn to speak about it. And they're not even listening to anybody else. They're just thinking about their own ideas. So a lot of what somebody's saying right now goes in one ear and out the other. And when it comes time for them to talk about their alternative, everybody else is thinking about why their alternative is better. So the communication is a difficult problem, even if you're in the same room. Well, how do we talk about our alternatives? Well, you can list the pros and the cons. That's been happening for many years. Benjamin Franklin, 200 years ago, I think, about now, wrote an article Priestley, a letter, actually. Joseph Priestley, the fellow who discovered oxygen, wrote to Franklin and said, I have a tough decision to make. Can you help me with this decision-making? He trusted Franklin. And Franklin wrote back saying, look, I don't know about your decision, but I'll tell you a process that I have. And this process is very similar to what we use today, with some major improvements to it, of course. And what he said is, for each of your alternatives, take a piece of paper and on one side write down the pros and the other side write down the cons. And so you could for example, in your decision about what to put in the cloud, you could take each application and you can say, if we put this in the cloud, what are the pros and what are the cons? And then after you do that for your alternatives, suppose we're making just a choice of whether or not to put it into the cloud. You can say, well, how do I balance these pros and cons? Maybe there's a pro on one side that sort of in my mind balances the other. Now we're getting to the part of decision making that's very important. That's measurement. How do you measure whether one thing is as important as another? And that's something we've learned to do. We've used mathematics for that in a nice way, which I can describe later. But that is a key in doing this. If you can't measure well, then you really can't do this well. Peter Drucker, a well-known business writer, wrote an article, I think, in the Wall Street Journal, says we have to learn to measure and not count. People are good at counting, but they're not very good at measuring. So we do have a way of measuring. So Benjamin Franklin said, if you have a pro that in your mind measures or equates to a con on the other side, just cross them both out and keep doing that until you can't go any further. And then maybe you can find one pro that balances two cons or vice versa. And when you're through doing this for all of your alternatives, then you can just look at the list, and now you've reduced the complexity and just think hard about it and make your decision. Well, we've gone a little bit further than that, but the terminology is the same. So we still have alternatives, and we have pros and cons. Now, what we do with the pros and cons is we say, for each pro and each con, what objective does that point to? In other words, what are you trying to achieve? And there's some subtleties here. So if you're buying a car, for example, the size of the car is an attribute. That's another term that people use. And you might say, that's a pro for this car, or it's a con for another. You might say, why is it a pro or a con? Well, what we emphasize is that when you look at attributes, you should say, what are the pros and cons that come out of that attribute in terms of your objectives? So a large car, for example, is more comfortable. It can carry more people. It is probably safer in an accident. What are some of the cons? It's more difficult to park. It probably costs more. It's less fuel efficient. And so each of these objectives that come out of the pros and the cons form what we call your objectives hierarchy. So let me start from the beginning again. So you have your problem that you've identified. You've identified some alternatives. And then from those, you can list your pros and your cons. And then from the pros and the cons, you extract your objectives. What are we trying to achieve? And that's why the book we wrote was titled Decision by Objectives. That's the key, focusing on objectives.
Rather than the decision process itself, huh?
Well, that's part of the process. The process has you go through these steps. What are your alternatives? What are the pros and cons? What are your objectives? Now, when we have the objectives, now we can really talk about what are you trying to achieve? What am I trying to achieve? And that's where things like win-win situations come in, because sometimes when you're negotiating with somebody, I can trade off some of my objectives for your objectives because they're not always zero sum.
It makes sense.
And then we have our objectives.
Yeah, I was just saying, for my listeners, I mean, you can apply this thought to capital budgeting, to portfolio management, to vendor selection for strategic planning. I mean, just it's a long checklist to use this.
Absolutely. That's the whole beauty of it, in that the process is a simple process. Once you get the terms down and follow this process, it's very robust, and it's mathematically sound as well. So once we have these objectives, there's typically too many of them to even think about it. The research in the brain says that we can only think about 7 plus or minus 2 things at once. So what do? We structure them. And what's the most common structure? Hierarchy. So we structure these objectives into a hierarchy of objectives. And that's an art. It takes subjectivity. And once we have this hierarchy of objectives, now we're ready for the measurement part. And we have ways of measuring with pairwise comparisons and some very fancy mathematical computations that can actually derive priorities that are, let me say, higher quality than the inputs you put in. Let me divert a little bit and talk about a term that most of you readers have heard about, GIGO. You've heard that before.
We know that.
And what does it stand for?
Garbage in, garbage out. We know that.
Okay, it's not the only thing, though. If you look at what some organizations do, Congress not excluded, you can put genius in and get garbage out.
That's a twist on that one.
So these people, they have the political roles to make decisions, they do all their research and so on. They think they've got the right objectives. They've researched, they've looked at their constituencies, and their genius goes in, and it butts heads with everybody else's genius, and you get garbage out.
Yeah.
There's another interpretation that we use, and that's called garbage in, genius out.
That's
now, this might be...
Yeah, let's take a break and talk more about that, because that may be more applicable to some of the stuff I've seen. We'll take a quick break here. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Professor Foreman. He's a professor of decision sciences at George Washington University and the founder of a local company called Expert Choice.
The Ballistic Missile Defense Report is provided by Raytheon.
Raytheon Company's Standard Missile 3 Block 1A completed its 19th intercept during a flight test at the Pacific Missile Range facility in Kauai, Hawaii. This was the first flight test of an SM-3 Block 1A against an intermediate-range ballistic missile and the first launch-on-remote engagement of a ballistic missile target. SM-3's interception of the target signifies a major milestone in the first phase of the current administration's phased adaptive approach for missile defense in Europe.
5 million hours of experience, 19 direct hit intercepts, unmatched engineering. Raytheon's Standard Missile 3 is preserving freedom at home and around the world. Now Raytheon engineers are developing the next generation SM-3. When seconds matter and there's no margin for error, Raytheon's Standard Missile 3 delivers. In fact, there's nothing standard about it. Raytheon, customer success is our mission.
Babies will do everything they can to keep you from sleeping. And they'll do this for well over a year. They'll throw up on your sweater, in your hair, and all over your car. They'll not only poop in their pants, they'll poop on your pants. They'll pull your hair and quite literally bite the hand that feeds them. They will talk nonstop between the ages of 6 and 9, but they won't say a single word to you once they turn 13. And when they do, it'll likely involve disagreeing at rather high volumes. Still, you will love them like nothing else, and you will do anything and everything you can to keep them happy and healthy, and so will we. At Kaiser Permanente, we offer families the tools they need to grow up and grow old together, from prenatal care to postnatal care to pediatric care and beyond. Because although there's nothing that makes us crazier than our kids, there's nothing that makes us happier either. Kaiser Permanente, may your family live long and thrive. Learn more at kp.org/thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
What does sustainability truly mean? How can agencies overcome the cultural, policy, and organizational resistance to change? In the midst of challenging economic circumstances, looming budget constraints, and compliance requirements with recent executive orders and policy directives, U.S. government agencies are under increased pressure to employ sustainability practices. Understanding the importance of sustainable efficiency in operations and the impact that the use of natural resources has on both our environment and our well-being as a society is paramount. Listen to Beyond Green, Making Sustainability Sustainable, as part of the Booz Allen Hamilton Expert Voices panel series, featuring sustainability experts from across government, Thursday, April 21st at 11 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. For more information, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Booz Allen, or visit the Expert Voices blog at boozallen.com/expertvoices.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Passero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, nutrition, dietary supplements, herbal remedies, and more. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio. Listen to past shows and discover other healthy living resources at myvillagegreen.com. Visit Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda at 5415 West Cedar Lane.
Market risk, higher taxes, high unemployment, uncertainty, retirement. This is Steve Burton, president of Equity One, and I would like to invite you to our tax-free retirement workshop at the Morton Steakhouse in Tyson's Corner on Wednesday, April the 20th at 7 p.m. Call 1-877-313-4080 to RSVP. You must be a homeowner and have a retirement account to attend. Call 1-877-313-4080. Learn how to make market gains without market risk, and that tax deferred is not tax free. Would you like to create your own private pension plan to attend this event at Morton Steakhouse in Tyson's Corner on Wednesday, April the 20th, call 1-877-313-4080, or you can register online at equityoneinc.com. That's equity, the number one, inc.com, or call 1-877-313-4080.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Professor Foreman, and he's a professor of decision sciences at George Washington University and founder of a company called Expert Choice, making decisions there. Before the break, we talked about garbage in, garbage out, genius in, garbage out, and garbage in, genius out, which I think everyone wants to hear about that last part. How do you get good stuff out of bad stuff coming in?
Okay, well, let me define what I mean by garbage. And we talked a little bit earlier about measurement. In other words, we have to measure, not count. Well, in the theory of measurement, there are four levels of measurement: nominal, ordinal, interval, and ratio. Nominal means a name only. Ordinal means rank. In other words, this is better than that. Interval has all the meaning of ordinal and nominal, but it also means that the interval between the numbers have meaning. So 5 minus 4 is the same as 7 minus 6, which is not always the case. In the Olympics, when they evaluate people for, let's say, gymnastics, the interval between a 10 and 9.9 in the judge's mind is huge.
Mm.
The interval between a 5 and a 4.9 is small.
It's almost like earthquake ranks. There's a whole lot more than just one number, isn't it?
Right. So if the meaning, if the same interval doesn't have the same meaning anywhere on the scale, then you really can't aggregate these numbers right. And trying to apply reason to these problems to help with your intuition really actually leads you astray. So you have to have proper measurement. So we have nominal, ordinal. Interval means that the interval is the same interval, has the same meaning anywhere on the scale. And the highest level of measurement, which has all the properties of the others, is called a ratio measure. Now, what a ratio measure means is that the same ratio has the same meaning anywhere in the scale. So 6 divided by 3 means the same as 100 divided by 50. Now, in graduate courses at the universities, they have grades A, B, C, and F. A is excellent, B is good, C is a polite failure. So in the professor's mind, the students know this as well, an A is 50 or 100 times better, the meaning is 50 or 100 times better than a C. When these grades get sent to the registrar, the registrar says that an A is twice as good as a C because, hold on a second, I feel like I turn off all these phones, because an A is a 4 and a C is a 2. So the meaning that an A is 100 times better than a C gets translated into twice as good by the registrar. So how do we develop measures that are ratio scale measures? Well, we do this with what we call pairwise comparisons. And we can actually have people compare things using words. We can say, this is moderately more important to me than that. So that in terms of putting something in the cloud, you could say ease of access is strongly more important to me than security.
Mm-hmm.
But security is moderately more important than cost.
Mm-hmm.
And so by doing these pairwise comparisons using words, now what, and I'm getting too technical here for some people, I'm afraid, but it's not that technical, really. The words are ordinal measures because we say moderate, that's less than strong. Strong is less than very strong. So the words have an ordinal meaning, but we don't know what the intervals between those words mean.
Yeah.
So by putting these ordinal measures in with words with a proper degree of redundancy and variety and a mathematical computation which is prevalent in most math and science called eigenvector calculations, we can actually derive ratio scale priorities. So we've put in ordinal measures, which is a lower level of quality, and we come out with ratio measures, which is a higher level of quality. So in a sense, we put in garbage and we get out genius.
That's good. A couple years ago, a fellow named Joan Allaire wrote a book called How We Decide. We talked about this yesterday on the phone. And he talks about blending feeling and reason, and he comes up with all kinds of analyses of how humans make decisions. And I think what you're proposing here is that you can use mathematical concepts as long as they're applied properly to the decision-making process. Is that right?
Yes, that's a great book. I really recommend it. I've recommended it for my graduate students. They love the book as well.
Just a young guy, too. Joan Allaire, just a young guy. It looks like he's 25 years old.
Well, he's put together a lot of the research. He doesn't do the research himself, and he wrote it very well.
Mm-hmm.
And David Brooks just came out with a book called The Social Animal. And he references Lair, but he also references a lot of the source information. Their books are very complimentary, and I recommend both of those books.
Great.
But the Lair book thing, especially to me and some of my colleagues in decision sciences, because a lot of people aren't aware of this yet. The people in decision sciences in most universities think that you give me a mathematical model and I'll tell you the answer. And that's not true. What Lair wrote about, and going back all the way to Plato and Freud, that reason doesn't just always triumph over emotion. That emotion really represents the parts of our brain that synthesize everything we learn on a daily basis. Part of it we're inherited with, in other words, in our genes. And then our intuition gets developed over time. So in the book, How We Decide, Lair cites some research that says, look, if it's an important decision, then your intuition can tell you what's best in most cases. But if it's more important than that, you might want to use some reason as well. So you might want to do pros and cons and this and that.
Mm-hmm.
Today, people put things in a spreadsheet, right? Get an Excel spreadsheet, put columns up, put in numbers from 1 to 10, add, multiply, whatever. That's applying reason. But what the researchers have found out that if the problem is a little bit complex enough, that reason doesn't work. Because the numbers you put in your spreadsheet, these numbers from 1 to 10, they don't represent the proper ratio.
Aha! Goes back to your ratio again.
Right. They don't represent how important things are to people in terms of what they're trying to achieve, what their objectives are. And so I have a little theorem proof that all important decisions are subjective.
Isn't that interesting?
Now people say, did you say that wrong? Well, no. And the proof is all important decisions have more than one objective. At a minimum, they have time and money. Now, if you ask two people what's more important, time or money, that's subjective. If you ask somebody who's old and rich, they would most likely say that time's more important than money. If you ask somebody who is young and poor, they might say if they're working three or four jobs, money's more important than time. And so in all the decisions we're making in our society, by focusing on objectives, we have to also elicit how important things are to various people in our constituencies.
You know what, it fits
how
in
important those constituencies are.
It fits in with your book, Decision by Objective, doesn't it? A lot of the concepts here you can take and just meld them together.
Exactly. And it's not that difficult to do. But if you miss one of these ingredients, in other words, if you just say, well, I'm going to start with my alternatives, list my pros and cons, then identify the objectives, and now you start to just put numbers on a scale of 1 to 10 on these objectives and multiply and add up, you're multiplying and adding up numbers that aren't the proper level of measurement. And there's some very solid mathematical theory that says in order to multiply and add up numbers, they have to be ratio scale numbers.
That goes back to what you said the previous block about the ratio.
Exactly. So all these things fit together, and fortunately we have software these days that makes it fairly easy to do. And as you mentioned, I was a co-founder of Expert Choice. It's based on the analytic hierarchy process theory developed by my former partner, Tom Soddy, while he was at Wharton. But there are many, many implementations of AHP now on computers because it's the most popular methodology in the world. So it's not that difficult for the computer to do. The difficulty is how do you work with people to explain to them that there are some key points in this process that you just can't throw numbers into a computer and come out with an answer.
Yeah, HP's used in many organizations. I've heard that a federal audience, 30 federal agencies have used some of these techniques. Over 100 universities are using some of these techniques. So it's not some, you know, small, focused, erudite principle. It's a principle that can be applied to a wide range of situations in the business world or in the world of defense.
Right. If you Google AHP in almost any topic, you'll find many, many articles.
Yeah. And I was at the Expert Choice website, and they have case studies of where HUD, they use it for capital planning. NASA used it for collaboration. You'd say, no, wait a minute. How can you take this mathematical concept and apply it to capital planning, maybe, but to collaboration? But if you take those principles, you can apply it to all kinds of different decisions. Everything, again, earlier, from capital budgeting to vendor selection to a collaboration. We have to take a quick break here. When we come back, we're going to do a little survey with Professor Foreman, see what kind of technology he likes today, and maybe dive in a little bit more about this AHP and how my listeners actually can maybe take and apply it to some key decisions they have to make in the world of IT. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with Don Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Professor Foreman, Professor of Decision Sciences at George Washington University and founder of Expert Choice.
Government personnel must continue to achieve mission-critical objectives no matter their work environment. Video conferencing technologies provide a highly effective collaboration solution for federal employees affected by budget cuts, BRAC initiatives, and telework mandates if they are secure based on open standards and deployable in limited bandwidth environments. Polycom is the first video provider to have an ultimate HD portfolio that is JITC certified, offering real-time face-to-face communication without compromising secure networks or consuming excessive bandwidth. Polycom enables government customers to collaborate over voice and video anywhere, anytime, securely both inside and outside the firewall, offering high-definition video calls at half the bandwidth of other companies. To learn more, visit polycom.com/federal.
The Telework Center arms you with all the information you need to know about teleworking in the federal government. Go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Polycom.
Policies issued by American General Life Insurance Company, Houston, Texas. Not available in all states. For details, visit matrixdirect.com.
Do you think you're getting your money's worth for your life insurance policy? Because if you're 40 and married and are paying more than $14 a month, chances are you're paying too much. Hi, I'm Brent Langdon for Matrix Direct. We partnered with American General Life to find you their lowest rates on term life insurance products. And if you're 40 years old and married, we could find you a $250,000 policy for less than $14 a month, which means you could save hundreds of dollars a year. Call us now for a free no-obligation quote. Call 1-800-600-2804. Since 1995, we've helped millions of people find out if they could save up to 75% on their term life insurance. See how much we could save you. It only takes 5 minutes and you could save up to 75%, and the call is absolutely free. Call Matrix Direct, 1-800-600-2804. That's 1-800-600-2804. 1-800-600-2804.
This audio puzzle is brought to you by Quest Government Services. Identify the federal agency problem. The answer? Too many leaks. Quest Security Solutions will help you pinpoint the cracks in your defenses and keep your critical data from seeping out. For a free risk assessment, visit quest.com/federal. That's quest.com/federal.
Please join Jim Flysick April 26th at 12 noon for his monthly series, The Federal Executive Forum. This month's program will discuss progress and best practices with virtualization and data center consolidation in the federal government. The panel includes government leaders from the Department of State, FAA, and DIA. Don't miss the Federal Executive Forum on Tuesday, April 26th at 12 noon, right here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. Sponsored by Red Hat, Unisys, and DLT Quest Software.
The ComSatCom report provided by Hughes.
The U.S. military is increasingly deploying airborne video surveillance applications to aid in a variety of operations, such as natural disaster assessment, homeland defense and protection, as well as military intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance missions. Only satellite networks can provide unconstrained coverage over land and water, enabling critical information to be shared in real time with command and control locations. Whether your mission is to secure our country's borders, operate UAV networks, or provide situational awareness beyond the line of sight, Hughes has the scalable airborne solution to meet your requirements anywhere in the world. Hughes commercial airborne broadband solutions are ideal for both fixed wing and rotary aircraft, are interoperable, can work seamlessly within your current operational network, and fit into your tightly constrained budget.
To learn more about Hughes technologies and contract vehicles, visit today's complete ComSatCom report on federalnewsradio.com or visit Hughes at defense.hughes.com.
As gas prices rise, focus is shifting toward the administration's ambitious clean energy goals. Join AFSEA Bethesda and AFSEA Energy May 4th at the Bethesda North Marriott for the second Energy and the Environment IT Day, featuring EPA, DOE, GSA, NRC, the DOD, NOAA, and Interior. View the impressive speaker lineup and register at afseabethesda.com/EEIT Day. Special thanks to premier sponsors Booz Allen, CGI Federal, DLT Solutions, General Dynamics, Lockheed Martin, Northrop Grumman, and platinum sponsors HP and Centurion Research Solutions.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we're speaking with Professor Foreman. He's a professor of decision sciences at George Washington University and founder of Expert Choice. We spent the previous part of the show talking about decisions, decision-making. I just want to maybe pull back here and go up close and personal and give you my little scientific tech survey here, Professor, see if you can fill in the blanks. I imagine some of our listeners are listening to you going, well, what's he got going on in the background there? Was that an iPhone? Is that an Android? I mean, well, you know, what kind of technology did he use? So the first question is, we touched on it earlier, what was the year of the first computer that you bought? What year was that?
I think it was about 1976.
76, that's the record. That's the new earliest one. Right now, today, how many email addresses do you have?
Just two.
Just two, okay. Your home desktop is a Mac or Windows?
It's both.
I have okay. Yeah,
I have
dual boot.
Computers,
yeah.
And I have a Mac, but I run Windows 7 on it, I'm afraid to say.
And notebook, Windows or Mac?
Well, that's what I'm, I don't have a desktop. I don't have a desktop. All I have is a laptop.
Yeah, me too.
Several of them.
Yeah.
I think Windows and Mac, the operating systems now are so similar that there's really not to distinguish.
Your home connection, cable, DSL, FiOS. What do you got at home?
Cable.
Cable. Okay. Cell phone, a feature phone or smartphone?
Smartphone, of course.
Well, I didn't know. I got to ask. Android, iOS. What you got?
Well, it's an interesting. I was playing golf about 2 months ago, and my iPhone, which I loved, fell out of my pocket in a sand trap, and I couldn't find it afterwards.
What a tough life!
So I decided to take the plunge into the Android market, and I got a Droid X. And I'm so thankful I lost my iPhone that I'm buying parts on Apple stock now.
I'm so thankful I lost my iPhone. And so, got an Android. How many apps have you downloaded? None, some, 20, zero?
Oh, quite a few. Okay. On the Android, probably 30 or 40.
30, okay. Do you own a tablet like an iPad or anything like that?
No, that's interesting. I was thinking of a tablet, but the way I work between the Droid X, which is a pretty big screen, and the laptops that I always have handy, the tablet just sort of doesn't make much sense.
Social networking, you in LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, any one of those things?
I do a little bit of LinkedIn and Facebook and Twitter, but I need to do more in the future, but I haven't done enough yet.
Yeah, I just do LinkedIn, and I'm kind of scared of Facebook. I haven't figured that out. Final two questions, up close and personal. The last book you read, let's say a paper-type book. What was the last book you read?
Well, the last book I read, I've been reading for a long time on paperback because I never have it with me. It's Ayn Rand's The Fountainhead.
Yeah, that's a long one, isn't it?
It's a long one, but the interesting thing to your readers might be that I bought a Kindle early on because I needed a book for my class that was out of print, and they said, here's a new version of it that's only available on Kindle, so I got the Kindle the next day. But since then, I found that my primary preferred mode of reading is to use Kindle on the iPhone or the Droid.
Listen to that.
Use that rather than the Kindle machine itself.
Wow.
And if possible, I get the audio book as well, and then I take notes on the Droid X, and those notes can be uploaded to your PC because Kindle has an application on the PC, and I then use that to put my lectures together.
Wow, that's great! And then finally,
a great combination.
The most important question is the Redskins' prediction for this coming season. 500 season, better than that? What do you think?
I don't have to do an HP model.
Yeah, that's what you have to have a guy like you do a model on that, and maybe the coach will bring
well, actually,
you in to
one
figure
thing,
that.
One thing we could do is, if you like, we can, after this is finished, I'll talk to you about putting together a model that your readers, your listeners can come into and put their judgments in, and we can synthesize and see what results from that.
Yeah.
There's a very good book called The Wisdom of Crowds, which you may have seen by Sawicki. And that's another topic we can talk about someday, but that would be an interesting. Take a survey of your readers using the analytic hierarchy process and predict what the Redskins are going to do.
But you know what? The quarterback, he's got to make a decision. Guess what? He's got to make a decision. He's got to make a decision, doesn't he? Does he throw it? Does he hold it? I mean, this thing is so applicable to so many things.
And how we decide, Larry points out that quarterbacks and golf players and so on, when they start to think too much about it, they don't do as well. It's almost all intuition and emotion.
And that's when they do well.
But there are other decisions where intuition and emotion are inadequate.
Great. Well, we got to get back to serious here, back to the serious topic of IT professionals making decisions about capital budgeting, about portfolio management. I think that's the whole reason behind the company expert choice is it provides a software tool to allow that. And you know, this isn't a commercial for your company, but it just provides a tool that other organizations, including agencies, have used. But it takes and takes some of this complexity and makes it easier. Is that what expert choice does?
Well, it's not just easier. It's much more effective. It does save time, but at first it appears it's going to take more time. Now, in our program at GW Business School, we have a project management program. And about 3 or 4 years ago, we got together and they said, you know, there's a new field coming about called project portfolio management. And we don't have a course in that yet. So they asked me to put something together. And I looked into it. I found a good book by Levine on project portfolio management. The course was just a fascinating course to put together. And the distinction, if your readers haven't thought about this yet, between project management and project portfolio management is that project management has to do with doing things right. Project portfolio management is doing the right things.
There's a subtlety there, huh? Yeah.
And the reason that became important is that as IT was growing in more organizations and people were throwing more money at it, top-level executives realized that, hey, these projects, we've been funding all these projects, but we're not really satisfying our objectives. We really haven't added to what our strategy objectives were, our strategic objectives. And so when you start to look at what the strategic plan is, the mission, vision of an organization, down through the goals and objectives, and then look at the alternatives. These are terms we talked about a little earlier. The alternatives to satisfying those objectives, those alternatives are projects. And projects then have certain costs. They have certain anticipated benefits. The anticipated benefits can be measured on your objectives hierarchy, which flow from your strategic plan. Then you have many people involved. You have different roles and governance in an organization. And finally, you have resource constraints. When you put all these things together, people just get a headache. But if you structure it properly and you use scientific principles as well as intuition, knowledge, and experience, it's amazing what you can come out with.
And I think that's the lesson of our discussion here is that although you certainly do have a strong mathematical background, is that you have to take into account the humanness of the people who are making these decisions.
Let me tell you a cute story that I tell my students about four scientists that were watching an empty glass house. Two people go into the house, and then an hour later, three people came out, and they scratched their heads and said, wait a minute, how could two people go in and three people come out? And so one scientist who was a statistician said, it must have been measurement error. And the other scientist said, no, clearly we saw two people go in and three people come out. Well, the next scientist was a biologist said, well, maybe they reproduced. And the other side said, no, they didn't have enough time. It was a glass house. That didn't happen. So they thought a while longer. The mathematician said, well, I know what the answer is. Let's just wait a little while longer. Somebody else will walk into the house, and it'll be empty again.
That's a tough one to figure out.
It is tough. So yeah. Plus one and minus one don't always equal zero. If you're talking about people walking into and out of houses, and then when they walk in and out of the house, and we have to use our intuition and logic and experience when we deal with numbers. The numbers can help us, but they can hurt us badly if we use them in the wrong way.
So if the listeners want to do a deep dive with you in this, they can go to the George Washington University website and take a look at the Department of Decision Science and learn more, maybe even take your class. If you are an IT professional and you want assistance in making decisions, you might want to do some of the things that the NASA folks did and contact the people at Expert Choice. And you would recommend Jonah Lehrer's book, How We Decide, wouldn't you?
I certainly would. And we have a great project management program, and we've got a great distance program. And the interesting thing about our distance program is they take the same courses, same requirements as the on-campus students. So it's just as well-structured and intense, and students love it. So I'd invite your your listeners to check into that a little bit.
Great, GWU, that's great. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'd like to thank my guest, Professor Foreman, a professor of decision science at George Washington University and founder of Expert Choice. Thank you, Professor.
My pleasure.
Been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 11, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2.
CNN Radio, I'm Bill Caiaccio. Topping the news this hour, doctors are talking about new guidelines for determining when a person has Alzheimer's disease. William Thies with the National Alzheimer's Association says people can have the disease a long time before they realize it.
Alzheimer's disease is a very lengthy disease that it starts years and years before people actually begin to show the symptoms of dementia.
Doctors hope by finding Alzheimer's sooner, it'll make it easier to treat. The biggest drug problem in the country right now is prescription drug abuse. The Obama administration is out with a plan to slow down the epidemic. They say it's worse than the crack cocaine epidemic of the 1980s. Weather conditions are brutal for firemen in Texas. A wildfire near the town of Graham forced hundreds of people to evacuate. Young County